Well, here we are. We have two extra people with us, our lovely wives. This is the first T. Marsh, T. Gordon double date episode with the wives. Y'all asked for the wives to come on. So we're just going to talk about family, some of our history, and just have some fun. So co-host Tim Gordon and Steph Gordon. And Taylor Marshall and Joy Marshall.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Joy.
So a lot of people don't know that Tim, you and I have never met in real life.
Yeah, I know. They find it hard to believe.
Yeah. We've never met in real life, and we'll probably meet this summer.
Yeah.
And of course, this is the first time that Steph and Joy have ever talked to one another. So
it's a little, we should have an icebreaker.
Someone telling off color Jim. Right. I guess that should be me.
So one of the reasons we're all together is I wanted Tim and Steph to share some of their backstory, and their time in Rome and the birth of their first child. So it's kind of a sensitive story, but they wanted to share it, and I think a lot of people would find it interesting, especially just getting to know who this Tim Gordon is and who Steph Gordon is and all the comments on the videos. So,
she's almost like a certain
troublemaker,
a troublemaker on the right side, almost like a young John Rickaford,
the female version.
Shouts out.
I know how to read the Bible.
Yes. Right. So, Tim, basically you guys were in Rome and you were working on your doctorate at the Greg.
It's a Greg.
Tell everybody what your thesis was and what you're up to.
I want to know how long were they married at this time?
Oh, yeah. How long were y'all married?
That's a good question. What were 2.5 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'd been, the summer before we got married, I had finished a master's degree at Loyola Marymount, the school which should not be named, on a Catholic program. And you know, I started teaching at Compton Community College. So I was coming to a marriage
straight out of Compton.
Yeah. And I basically just needed a job in order to get married. Right. And worked a couple of years at high school, but was still teaching at the community college.
And
at night
we'd drive to Compton and I'd wait in the car. And I swear, sometimes, like, if a car backfired in the parking lot, I'd be like,
I was just telling you that it was a car backfiring. In this case, it was actually gunshot. So, you learn now 10 years old. No, but I mean, so, like, it was high school teaching, same as now, one of the same places. I started the Catholic school the second year we were married. And I'd been applying to PhD programs all the while. And, the Greg, through a family friend, came to be my main target. And we got excited about going out there on our first trip. Mm-hmm. And so we went out there about two and a half years into marriage and ended up spending almost a year and a half out there doing the licentiate rather than the, doctoral work. I'd gotten into the doctoral work by the end of that year, but it was really a hell of a good time.
Oh yeah. We sold like everything we had to go out there, his car, everything. And so we had like a chunk of change to get out there. We didn't even know what our apartment would look like, anything. We just basically like did this transaction on the internet with this nice couple that were living in America. But they said, yeah, we have an apartment. So they sent us this key. It was like this long and had like all these jagged edges into it. I was like, what is this key to?
Like, we kept the key.
We have it in a big shadow box.
Nice.
Because the key is like huge. So we get to Rome, and right when we get to the outside of our apartment, it's just covered in graffiti. And I didn't realize, you know, that in Rome, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're living in a bad neighborhood.
Yeah, it just means welcome to Rome.
Yeah, we're Americans. I'm like, there's graffiti everywhere. What's happening? So we get to our new apartment, and it actually was just beautiful. It was, you know, there was no mice living in there.
Not one mouse.
We were pleasantly surprised.
That was great, though. I mean, we literally got off the plane at Fiumicino, took a cab, and we were just like, here's the address. It's in San Lorenzo was our neighborhood, east of the Coliseum by about a mile, near the Sapienza. We didn't know it's kind of a college neighborhood, but it's one of the seven Basilica San Lorenzo, basically halfway between San Lorenzo and Santa Croce. Anyway, so yeah, just pulled up to our apartment, got out, and began a journey whose destination we didn't know where it would end, but I wanted to do the doctorate, and that was the goal of being out there. She wasn't pregnant when we went out there, but something happened over the course of living there. That
total,
yes, Romanitas, right?
yeah. So it was a heck of a thing. You guys are, I think you guys are like 4 years ahead of it. You're celebrating your 17th or 18th this year?
We're coming up on
18. Yeah, we're coming up on 14. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. So, and then for people who don't know, the licentiate is sort of the pontifical version of the masters.
Right. Yeah, the non-secular masters.
Is that the STL?
Because, yeah. Yeah, STL is, and it's all the cool thing with the older titular form of degree at the Catholic degree, which is the older one, is like, yeah, the STL is, it's all very specific. So like STL is Sacred Theology Licentiate. Of course, many people go out to Rome and contract the STD from
yeah,
heard that.
From a university.
You always hate to ask people, are you there for the STD? And
because they don't call it the PhD. No. They call it the Sacred Theology Doctorate, the STD.
Yeah.
And then English speakers are always kind of grossed out like that. Yeah, I went to Rome and got an STD.
Yeah.
And you're like, I came for the STD. I stay for the pizza.
I was talking to a guy who got his STD in Rome, the doctrinal kind. And he asked permission on his from them to rearrange the letters, and they said no.
Oh, that's hilarious. It was a little joke.
Yeah, because he was sending it out to secular jobs too.
Right.
Yeah.
And he just like they just don't. They're like, now you have STD from Rome. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, your future employer asks if you have a PhD, as they want. You're like, no, but even better, I have an STD I'd like to share.
Official.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then you tell them, you're like, yeah, I actually was given this by a priest. Yeah, that's what we heard about the church.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no.
Not really, but yeah. So it's a PHL. Which sounds kind of like if I slur at the end of that, I can, without lying, I can make it sound like I have a PhD. Yeah.
Too bad it's not like a PhD.
Right.
Because I think I have a PhD.
PhD.
PhD. Right.
So it's the licentiate in philosophy?
Yes.
Yeah.
From the systematic. Greg. Yeah. Hey, we could, I really like my Greg. Let me try to do it right here.
There we go.
That's my Greg.
Nice.
Oh, that's Loyola. No,
that's,
sorry.
That's not it.
It's Marymount.
There it is.
Is it in Latin?
It's all in Latin. That's good. Got B16's name on it.
That's great.
So, which is the cool thing about pontifical degrees. And then there's my worthless law degree. But we'll talk about that on a dark day, not a happy day. Yeah, So the long and the short of it is it was an amazing year. I ran the Rome Marathon when we were out there. Steph was training for it as well. Got about halfway.
Yeah, I got to like 12 miles and then I found out I was pregnant with Abby. So they just had to stop right there.
Yeah.
So, I wasn't able to actually complete it.
Not 12 miles into the actual marathon, but you
tried. I thought
and
I was done.
Pulls over into a porta potty, takes a pregnancy test halfway, and I better stop.
Yeah.
Through training.
Yeah.
Well, that's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, I've mentioned before that I've done the gelato cup.
Yeah, that's right.
which is running around Vatican City. I've done that a couple times. The race did not win, but I did run
was
around.
Was anybody else run in the race with you?
Oh yeah, it was seminarian. No.
To get gelato.
It was a group of seminarians.
Yeah,
and I've done it for 3 years in a row. And I think it's 2 miles. I think it's a 2 mile or about.
Just 2 miles?
Right. Yeah. You start at the obelisk. You start at the obelisk in St. Peter Square.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You run out to the edge. You hang a left. You run all the way up towards where the Vatican Museum entrance is. And right. then you take a really hardcore hill. It's pretty tough. Oh. It's a steep incline. You go all the way up to the tip top of Vatican City. And it is so trashy, man. It's so gross outside Vatican City.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Outside
yes.
the walls.
Yeah.
Outside you know? The walls.
Yeah, it's not pretty outside not, the walls.
Inside, it's a garden. Outside, it's disgusting. And then you, yeah. you hang a left, and then you start heading back downhill. And then you come all the way around kind of behind this, where the CDF is. Congregation Doctrine of Faith, mm-hmm. and then you curve back into the piazza and end at the obelisk.
Wait, I thought I never knew exactly where the Holy Office was. Isn't it? Is it in St. Peter's? It's not in St. Peter's.
It's not. Well, it's so. If you're standing at the obelisk in St. Peter's Square and you're looking at the facade of St. Peter's, mm-hmm. okay, so you start walking towards the facade, and then. If you went into the facade, you hang a left, and you kept walking, there's a staircase that goes down on your right. Mm-hmm. Go down there and hang a little bit of left, 50 yards, and there's the CDF.
Got it.
Or if Got you're it. Waiting at the metal detectors on that side of St. Peter's, if you're looking at St. Peter's to the left, if you're waiting at the metal detectors, turn around 180, and you'll see a big building behind you. That's the CDF.
Got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know, are you familiar with where the Greg is, Taylor?
No, I've never been.
It's right near the Trevi.
Yeah, it's right off the Trevi. Okay. You know how Trevi Fountain's yeah. so tight and there are like
sure.
eight mm-hmm. little entrances mm-hmm. or exits, mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. arms? Yeah, it's like 90 seconds down. I used to know all the streets. Yeah, it's literally a, probably a 75-second walk from the Trevi Fountain. It's a you know beautiful building. Do you know where the Angelicum is? The Angelicum, you just keep going that way for about 2.5 more minutes down Via Nazionale. It's neat. Steph used to get herself into trouble at the Trevi Fountain Piazza, being a troublemaker because those
you probably remember, but I think they kind of prey on like young men, these vendors. Whenever you're there with a young lady, they'll like hand the young lady a rose.
Yeah.
And then they'll kind of, right, then they'll come to the young man and they'll kind of try to shame them into, at first they tell you the rose is free. And then the woman will be like, oh, okay, thank you. And she'll kind of proceed on her way. And then they'll come to the young man and be like, no, give me some money. They did that. They tried to embarrass him like. Every time we were down there, and we used to walk down to the Trevi almost every night after dinner. I'd make dinner, and then we'd go and we'd walk down there and have gelato and just kind of sit there kind of enjoy our time. Mm-hmm. One time, this is so dumb, but I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. They're going to give me that flower, and I'm just going to take off.
These are the schemes she kicks up in her head. From people that note these comments.
They were purposely trying to embarrass him in front of me, and I mean, we're married, so it's not like, you know.
Right.
That we could handle it, but still just made me mad. You're trying to embarrass my husband in front of me. So I was like, I'm tired of this. So he said, all right, here, free flower. And I took it. I was like, well, thank you very much.
Make him think twice before handing you a flower.
Yeah, exactly.
So I just
don't give
took
me
off
one.
Down the street. And yeah, that didn't end well.
Yeah, because they started, there were like two of them that started after and they got close to him. And I can't remember what I did, but I was like, did they put their hand on you?
Well, they tried to grab my arm, and that's what I was like.
And I was like,
oh, no.
I didn't have that idea.
It was a G idea that started getting PG-13
RFS. Yeah, it started getting real.
And then all of them, like, collected around. They all have, like, little shivs, I was told. So, yeah, my buddy, I forget what I told the guy not to touch her. And
you grabbed the rose, and you just, like, tossed it in the opposite direction. And they actually went after it.
Oh, yeah, that's so, right. Like, I took it, and I chunked it, and I was like.
Flower and they're like freaking out over it, but anyway, yeah,
it's just one example of the ideas she cooks up just to get in a little mischief. She's a sweet lady, but mischievous as all get out. That's hell of a cook.
It's kind of cute because our first time in Rome ever, we got off the plane, came and we went straight to the Trevi Fountain and had dinner, remember?
Where do you remember?
Yes, I remember that perfectly.
That really romantic time we had, babe, when we first got to Rome.
I don't do well with jet lag, but that was great.
Yeah.
That was 2005?
Six.
No, six. Was it? Yeah, 2006.
Oh, was it 2006?
Were y'all in 2006?
Yeah.
We went
there in 2006.
The, fir- The first trip that we took that we were like, dude, we're going to the Greg, because we met our priest friend who was getting his STD out there. Yeah, we went to visit him. That was 2006.
The degree, folks, the degree.
The degree. Yeah, when were you out there? We were out there in March or April. We were out there for Easter.
Oh, we were out there in February.
Oh, really? Oh. You beat us by a month. That's funny. It would be funny if we'd over...
That would have been really funny.
...across paths.
I'm like, look at those couple over there fighting with those guys over the roses. How embarrassing.
Yeah. We were the weird Americans in our neighborhood. Yeah. Like, we were always... People thought we were so weird because we were married and I was pregnant and we had our own apartment. Like, all our neighbors... What, remember the time the Italian came and knocked on the door for on Thanksgiving Day? Yeah. And he asked us where we were from. And I said, oh, we're from California. And he started, like, surfing, like, in the hall, like, dude, and saying all these hilarious things. I was like, I wish I got that on camera.
Well, he was a college kid. I think he was inebriated from something.
Well, of course he was. Yeah. He was always, the same kid would always hang out his window with an air horn and, like, or no, with a megaphone, thank you, and, like, shout at women walking down below. I'm like, does this work for you?
The kid had dreads. It wasn't working for him. No. Yeah. Steph always wanted the, like, four things.
No, it was an egg. I always wanted to drop an egg on the back of his head as he's, like, leaning out below our window. I was like, this kid is driving me crazy.
That's right. Well, I was big and pregnant when we went and you had a collar on the whole time. So
that's right. I mean, we went six. I was an Episcopalian priest. Mm-hmm. That's back when I was Father Marshall. And Joy was
pregnant with the
big
fourth.
And pregnant.
Yeah, with Jude.
With fourth. Jude or Jude Ambrose.
Mm-hmm. Jude Ambrose.
And so we were just like walking around hand in hand, like a priest and a collar and a big blonde pregnant lady.
That's funny.
I remember we were walking around. Because, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of money, and so we were trying to save money on cab fare, but of course she was pregnant, so we were walking and walking and walking all over Rome. She was pregnant. Perfect. And at one point she just stopped walking, and she's like, I can't walk anymore. This is it.
Just starting to get lower pelvic pains,
pain in her pelvis. Oh, and we just, like, hugged each other, and we prayed, and we're like, we don't know what we're going to do, because it was kind of getting late at night.
We were trying to get somewhere, like,
and we prayed, and then I just looked up, and we were standing in front of a shop.
That's right.
And
it was an orthopedic shop.
It was an orthopedic shop.
It had, like, braces.
Sold braces. And so I walked in there, and I said, do you have a brace for a pregnant lady? He goes, yes, of course.
He had, like, those bands, you know, like this, support bands.
It was like a giant.
Just, like, right there.
Lifesaver.
No, it was like a brassiere, but for a giant baby.
Belly brace.
Belly brace. Yeah. And I was like, I'll take one. Bought it.
What were the odds?
She went into the changing room, put it on. We were good to go.
Kept going.
Oh, nice.
We were standing right in front of him.
We were standing right in front of him, and I was like, that's it. We can't go any further.
So, you remember where that was? You're standing right in front of. Oh, no. That's. It's strange because we know the geography there.
I feel like we were on our way
there.
To Trastevere or something like that.
Maybe we were. Mm-hmm.
We nearly lived in Trastevere.
That's my favorite part, yeah.
It's neat. We didn't end up going there that many times. That was our first apartment. It fell through. But, you know, we would have advised you, the younger Gordons would have advised the younger Marshalls or anybody going to Rome, is use the metro, because that's far better than the buses, and it's like London's metro system, except it's, like, cute and quaint, and it's just an X. There's Linea A and Linea B, and you can get anywhere you need to go. It's like a little warp system.
I think we went to St. Paul's outside the walls that way when we have taken the that way.
Yeah, I just disagree, Tim. Yeah. I hate the metro in Rome.
Really?
I would rather walk.
Taylor's never been one for...
The metro.
Subways underground passage.
Underground.
Public transit seems so socialistic to us, but, like, and I wouldn't like the London system, what I've heard of it, but it's like there are only 15 total stops or something on each line, and it's an X through the city, and it's such a tiny city.
No, I get it. It's people would say, let's jump on the metro, and be like, I'll walk.
Yeah.
You're like that when we lived in DC area and you had to take the train from Virginia.
Oh, I know.
You hated it.
I hate metros. My subways, I don't like that. I don't want to be packed with a bunch of people. Part of it is I always feel that if there's an old lady, I have to give up my seat.
It's a good rule of thumb.
Which means I'm always standing and crowded with a bunch of sweaty people. standing up.
Their arms up.
He likes his personal space.
I don't like that at all. You know, if I weren't a Texan and I felt like I could sit down and make old ladies stand up and just read a book while I'm there or look at my phone or whatever, it'd be great. But if I have to stand with a bunch of people that are sweaty and
we're gross. Just used to our open spaces here. We just don't.
Oh yeah,
can't get over there.
No, I know. Yeah. I know.
So I'm just like, I'll get blisters.
They are smelly.
I have walked.
That's one thing
from the big termini across from all the way back to St. Peter's. I know I could take the metro pretty fast.
Yeah,
but I just walk it because it's just.
We used to do that track a lot.
It's only about probably 4 miles from Termini to St. Peter's.
It's not that big of a city. Everybody, you know, it's actually pretty compact.
It's like Disneyland. But it's just like when you're at Disneyland, let's face it, which is relatively tiny. By the end of the day, even if I'm not a pregnant lady, I just need, I'm always happy to take the Disneyland Railroad. Yeah. So, but, you know, I like walking at the beginning, but.
Yeah.
The metro is smelly and the people do not wear deodorant that take the metro.
Yeah.
So
deodorant free zone.
If you're a young pregnant woman, they would always call her a ragazza madre, a child mother. She's
people
like 25.
People would hang out of the aisle, like staring at me and like pointing and like would say,
what would
child
I do?
Mother. And Tim would, if he was in the vicinity where someone was like, he would like snap in their face. And then they would kind of like, oh, okay, excuse me. Is that considered rude?
Were they trying to, you think they were just fascinated? Like, oh man.
Yeah. They were absolutely fascinated that I was in my 20s, pregnant, married. We had our own place because they all live with their parents in the city until they're like.
Yeah, they do.
40.
80 years old. And so they're like, they thought we were just the weirdest thing. Like they would constantly, we taught English and they would always tell me like, oh. This was wanted, like this pregnancy was wanted, and like, of course, yes, of course, what pregnancy isn't wanted?
And they would pretend to be confused by the fact that we had the same last name, like the patronymic system allegedly confused them. They'd be like, so not brother, sister, we'd be like, definitely not. And then we'd be like, I think, you know, before a couple generations ago, for about like 100,000 years of human history, everyone did this, like. So they didn't, you know, they're very friendly though. The Italians, we got along with them very well. So it wasn't the same thing as like an American liberal poking their nose in, you know, they were just kind of like, they would ask, it was kind of pointed, but they're so friendly. They just.
Once you told them like, yeah, it's normal. They'd be like, oh yes, yes. Normal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now
okay,
come over and eat. Yeah.
I mean, they'll eat.
We got so many invitations. It's just a great time. I think I told you, Taylor, that park between San Giovanni and Santa Croce is where I would train for the marathon. And we had lots of adventures just hanging out at that park, too, because it's so close to our house.
Bambino.
We have a little baby here.
Who is this?
This is Margaret.
This is your Maggie.
She's
gonna join, Maggie, I guess she's going to join the show.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
We should just get all the children. Like
she's got jammies and some hairstyle.
I love it. I had that hairstyle just a little while ago.
Look at that cherubic face.
It's horrible.
Did she just wake up?
Yeah.
She's
been up since like 6:15.
All the other kids are at school. But we have 8 kids, so this is number 8. This is Margaret, Grace.
Can you say hello?
Hi. Hi.
Hi.
So then speaking of babies, so then you're pregnant.
Yeah. I'm pregnant with Abby. Everything's going great. I'm walking to and from teaching English. Like I had an office near the Spanish Steps, and it was literally when I would have my coffee in between clients, we taught English. I'd walk out onto the balcony and look at the Spanish Steps. It was amazing. So I was walking to and from work. And out there, they do ultrasounds every month. And so on my 7th month ultrasound, everything was perfectly fine, no problem at all. And one of the ladies, the Italian women that I had worked with at that Spanish Steps office told me, you know, don't use the public health care system here. You know, try to find a clinic to have your baby at. And so she had recommended a place that we go to. And in between clients one day, I met Tim over at this new clinic that was very nice. They had, I see, I remember they had like a couple of Our Lady statues. And I was like, okay, this seems like this.
It was Catholic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a Catholic.
West of the Tiber. So it was in Vatican City.
Yeah, it was in Vatican City. And we met the what would be my doctor and saw the facility, and it was lovely. And I remember he asked me, hey, you know, we need to do an ultrasound so I can see where the baby is. And so I was like, well, you know, I actually have to get to work, so I really don't have time for this. But something, and I'm more type A that way. I want to be on time. I don't want to be late. I don't want to make people upset at my work. Something told me like, no, stay and do this ultrasound. And so I'm in the middle of it, and he's coming, you know, up to the top because Abby at this point was breech. And his face just kind of turns pale and like white as a sheet, and he leaves the room. And I grabbed Tim's hand, and I was just like, that's normal, right? Like, doctors do that in ultrasounds. This is typical, right? And Tim, of course, is trying to keep me calm and try to reassure me that I'm sure he's just had to do something. And so like, he comes back in with several other nurses and doctors. And he says to us in very broken English, and I'll never forget this because this is like when our adventure like began, like we are parents now. Like, he came in and he said, something wrong with baby's brain. Must have baby right now. And I was a month. This is 7 months long. I thought I had a month. You know, I had, I was my first baby. I was thinking, I'm going to go natural. I'm going to do all these things the way I want to do them. And then all of a sudden it's like emergency. We didn't know what was wrong with her. And so Tim asked the doctor to borrow his computer, and he just pecked out an email. And a lot of our family members say they still have this like email. He didn't know what to say because our world has just been turned upside down. So he pecked out an email to our whole family and said, something's wrong with the baby's brain. Steph's going into surgery like today. And so
I didn't even think it was that specific. I was like, something wrong.
Like, you're like, ah,
baby coming. Bye. And they're like, what?
And we didn't have a cell phone. We didn't, you know, none of this. So our family for probably about like 13, 14 hours was like, didn't know what was going on. And so I went to Fateh Beni Fratelli Hospital, and
just in the Tiber.
And the whole time that we're there, we go in, and Tim's like immediately telling people, like random people, like as we're walking in, like, this is not an abortion. We're having this baby, like even people who weren't like doctors and stuff, because he was so worried that they were going to think something, you know, like do something to our child. And right. Like, no, we want this child no matter what is going on. And so I get into a second big room, and.
But we were needless to say, we were stultified and terrorized. Like, we were completely, it was the first cab ride we'd taken since, we were absolutely in shock.
So did you think that they were, just because you're in Europe and there's a language barrier, that they were going to abort your child? Is that what you were worried?
I mean, this is after we'd been out there. I did. We'd been out there for a year. By now, my Italian was good. But it like the second this happened on July 15th, 2008, my Italian just left me for the next like week. It was like an exodus. I just was so terrorized and so upset that like I could no longer speak Italian for like a week. So yeah, I was speaking English. It was weird. It was like a phenomenon. I was speaking English and I was just like, no abortion, you know? And I was
like everybody in the room, like they were probably like, yeah, dude, we got it or whatever. But they came in with like 13 doctors to do another ultrasound, because I had the images. So when I showed the original person to check in, they all like freaked out immediately. And like all these doctors surrounded me and did another ultrasound. And like all of them, when they're doing the ultrasound, they're just staring at the screen, like with puzzled faces. Like, and we still had no idea what was going on. And so eventually, in Rome, they told me, they're like, we're going to do an emergency C-section right away. And in Italy, that means 12 hours later. And so all night long,
or 24
hours later,
yeah.
All night long, Tim and I are, what is going on? We had no answers. The only thing they told us is that she had bleeding in her skull. And so I didn't know, you know, at any moment, is my child going to die in my womb? Like, I had no idea, like, if she would survive this, and if she did, how long even after birth, if she made it that long.
Yeah.
And so the next morning, because Tim wasn't allowed to stay that night.
They kicked him out.
And so I just spent all night long saying Hail Marys, like the whole night. I just couldn't sleep. So I just said Hail Marys the entire night. And then the next morning, I got prepped for surgery. And then he met up with me. And
we're still all day before you had this.
Yeah, we were waiting for I was sitting in a chair just outside the surgery ward, like for hours, just waiting. She was still moving. And so I knew she was doing okay, but I didn't know like what was going to happen. I didn't really what they saw. And so I went through my emergency C-section and had some weird reaction to the anesthetic. And so I'm sick and it was horrible. And they take Abby, and I kid you not, they took her from me and put her immediately into an incubator, rushed her out of the room, put her in a helicopter, and flew her to Gemelli Hospital.
Whoa.
Oh my gosh. Tim didn't see her.
Well, I saw her.
Well, no, I'm saying you didn't see her, but like a second. Like it was.
Yeah, I just saw her one brief moment. Her head was huge because she had hydrocephalus that had caused the bleeds. The bleeds had caused the hydrocephalus.
So how huge? I mean, what did you see?
Scary. Imagine, I saw a little newborn baby, and it was freakish. I mean, right. Abby's a beautiful little girl, but imagine me, like, I didn't know what to expect. Steph was still behind the curtain, right?
Right.
They're like, just see your baby, and then we're gonna helicopter to Gemelli.
Did you watch the C-section?
No. Okay. They didn't even let you. But mm-hmm. That's. Zomely so
don't
much
recommend
you
it.
Can get into slasher
by the
films.
Way
yeah
everybody out there don't recommend that
because of this because we have five children. I've had to do a C-section every time, so there's been a few times Tim they're like, hey, come cut the umbilical cord, and Tim's like, oh, and warn him like, your wife, we just she had surgery. But
have you watched the C-section?
Well, Joy's had the first seven.
Had one C-section.
Three were at home.
Yeah.
And then the final, this kid, look at this big head. Look at Miss Cranium here.
She was a C-section.
She just couldn't get her out. Big head. You have a big head?
Taylor, as they were starting to.
Sitting there and I could see past the curtain. And so I watched the C-section, and then you kind of saw me go white and
about
to pass
out. Yeah, he went
white
as a sheet, and I was like, look at me. Eye contact, don't look again. You know, I had to like walk him through it as I'm being cut open. I'm like, no, you can do this.
Because I saw them pulling her out bloody through the hole, and I was like about to just go out.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Really? You saw the whole thing? Did you see the cutting?
I don't remember seeing the cutting, but I remember seeing them like,
don't
recommend.
Unless you.
You know, I'm just going to be a snobby patriarch here, but I just don't think we guys need to be in there.
Yeah, no, I kind of agree. Because, I mean, they keep you out for that anyway. Yeah. I was there. One thing that you could do is offer moral support, like, and like talk to her on this side of the
surgery
curtain.
And like the language barrier, like I had no idea. Any woman out there, Joy, like once you've been through a C-section, you know what to expect. But here I am in a foreign country, and like even like the spinal and strapping me down to the table, everything. This was my first surgery ever. I had no idea. Like, is this typical? What's going on? Are they doing this special because of what's going on with Abby? I had no idea what was going on, and I didn't even get to see her, but.
Steph, you didn't see Abby. Only Tim.
I never
saw her. Oh. That's amazing.
Only Tim. And the thing is like I have a very special devotion to Our Lady because of this moment in my life. Because after her surgery, they had taken me to a room, they share rooms out there. And they had put, I don't think they would have done this in America, but out there they put me in a room with a woman who had just birthed her baby successfully, and she had her baby with her, and she had what I always wanted, like my first baby. She had her family was coming with flowers, and they were just she was just elated and like showing this beautiful new baby. And here I am, like sharing a room with this woman, and I don't even know if my child's alive. I haven't even seen her. I've had this horrible surgery that I was like, they weren't giving me pain management at the time, so I was like kind of out of it. And I remember I just said a prayer, and I just said, like, I just was thinking about Our Lady suffering, seeing her son on the cross, and I was just trying to unite myself with her. And I was just like, listen, please just deliver me from this emotional terror I'm in right now, like watching this like family enjoy their new baby. And I, you know, I don't have mine with me. And I remember I fell into, I went immediately asleep after that. And the reason that that's interesting to me is because my pain was so high at that point that I was exhausted, but I couldn't physically calm down because my heart was racing from my pain being so high. So I remember falling asleep, waking up the next morning, and I was alone in my room. They had moved the other woman out of there. And then that's when I first talked to Tim, who had apparently just a hell of a night, like trying to find Abby and seeing her and finding out what actually had happened to her. So,
yeah, because as soon as they pulled her out, if Fate Bene Fratelli, which is, you know, in the heart of Rome, on the Tiber Island, it's pretty much the one thing there is the hospital. They helicoptered her to Gemelli, which is north of Rome.
Oh, they took JP2?
Yeah, it's where JP2 went after he got shot, Gemelli Hospital. And so I had to get there. Now, during the course of the day, because they actually pulled Abby out 5:30 p.m., you know, basically a full 24 hours after the saga began the day before, I'd gone home the night before. I showed back up at the hospital at like 6 a.m. I just sat in our apartment looking at the wall. And then, you know, they told me I could go back at 6. So I went back at 6. So I get there at 6 and was waiting around all day. And I was clearly just some young guy distraught. They kept kicking me out into the lobby. Socialized care is not the way, people. just trust us. Take it from the Italians there who admonish this strongly. But so I was just out in the lobby most of the day. They'd only let me come in and see Steph once every couple hours. And an American couple was a Time magazine editor, saw me, really helped me out. You know, I mean, we're probably on opposite ends of the spectrum ideologically. But, you know, Michael Frank and his wife is the name of the couple. They were really great to me. They're taking care of me. They got a cell phone for me through the day. You know, I think they contacted my parents.
They lived closer to the hospital, so they let him stay. They like gave him rain to the apartment. They're like, you just stay here, take a shower, rest, because he was having to go back and forth because we're poor out there. So he was having to go back and forth from the hospital to our apartment, which is a ways. And so like they were like, we live close to the hospital. Please stay. We'll drive you around. We'll do anything you need us to do.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a godsend. But so they were like, when Abby came out, you know, it was 6 p.m. They're like, here, go back with your wife for a couple hours. We're going to clean her up. Then she'll be helicoptered out to Gemelli. I'm like, where's Gemelli? They're like, you have to go identify her at Gemelli. I was like, I don't even know how to get there. We've lived here nearly a year, and we've taken a cab only once at Christmas. So I don't even know. They're like, oh, it's too far for a cab, or it's too far for a normal cab. So the Franks again helped. They're like our Italian friend. This woman who lives out here is Italian, Elisabetta Beraldo. She'll help you. So, and I hadn't slept for nearly 2.5 days at that point. So when they came in to get me, it was a little later. It was like 9. You know, we're just going to this new university hospital. It's like this big Stalinist, you know, architectural style.
It's huge.
It was totally large and dark. And it was, I think, 9:30, 10 when we got there. It felt like I was, you know, on the other side of the moon. And she was just holding me by the hand, Elisabetta. She's just dragging me around. We were looking for one little room where Abby was in an incubator with a doctor. We were looking for it for, it felt like an hour. She was just dragging. I was dispirited. I remember going in there and seeing the doctor, seeing Abby for the second time, and just feeling, you know, profoundly saddened by all of this. Happy she was alive, but she was really skinny and really tiny. A month
she had just had her first brain surgery. She
right,
had blood on the brain, and so in the time it took Tim to get from me to her, they had put a tube into her brain to release a lot of drain, and so he's seeing her. You know,
just post-surgery.
Premature.
Wow.
It was wild.
And so she was there at that hospital for another month and a half. And how they did that was that she was in ICU. And I, on my end, the nurses and doctors told me, you're not allowed to leave this hospital until you can walk up and down this hall. And I didn't know how long my child was going to even be alive. So I feel like another way that our Lord kind of helped me through this is that I was in such pain and I knew I couldn't walk. So I just said, you know, please just get me on my feet and let me show these nurses that I can do this so I can get out of this hospital and go see my child. Yeah. And so I got up, walked, and they released me or 2 days later. And I went to go see Abby. And when she was in ICU, again, they didn't let us see her together. I was allowed to go 3 times a day. Tim was only allowed twice for 15 minutes. I was allowed a half hour each time, and we're never together. And so we would sit outside her ICU for, what was it, a week? We would have to leave at night, but we would sit all day long outside her. We couldn't see her. We just have to sit out in this waiting room, just waiting for our time to see her. And then we would go home at night, which was just brutal because my birthday was only a couple of days after hers. And so I remember on my birthday, I was just like the worst day of my life. I was like, oh, this is the worst birthday.
How old were you, Steph?
How old was I? I'm terrible with dates.
You were turning 26.
26, yeah.
You're turning 26.
And so then after about a week of that, the doctors told us, like, she had hydrocephalus. She had major, like, catastrophic brain damage. So basically her entire left hemisphere of her brain was almost completely destroyed.
It's totally flattened.
Totally flattened. And they said that she might be a vegetable for the rest of her life. And so at this point, we're like, okay, so we're never going home. Like, if our child's on a breathing machine, and then we're going to live in Italy as long as we're together. And so
they
eventually released her from ICU. And
then Steph had to go back in the hospital.
Yeah.
Once she was out of ICU, Steph went back into the hospital with her to stay bedside next to her for 3 weeks.
Because she'd had finally, after the blood was drained from her head, she'd had her permanent shunt placed into her brain. And so that took a month. And I got to say, because one of the great things about that hospital, even though it wasn't there's a lot of things wrong with it, but one of the great things about it is that they had a lot of us women in the same floor that had babies of various, you know, difficulties. Like, they had all had problems. And some of these women were incredible. Like, they had to deal with just, I remember one baby that he had brittle bone disease. So that whenever they would touch his arm, it would break, like soft pressure. And so this baby would be screaming throughout the night, and all these women were just praying and, you know, just loving on their little babies, even though they had all these like horrible things going on. And one of the literal lights of my time there was Tim again wasn't allowed to stay the night. I'm there with Abby. She just had her second brain surgery, and I was stuck in the hospital for a month. But outside my window, they, like, 20 minutes after they'd kick him out, I would see St. Peter's Dome. I had a really good view of the dome, and they would turn it on like a nightlight, like 20 minutes after he would leave. And so for me, it was like, oh, like, St. Peter's is my nightlight. And I always felt like so, like, just, I don't know if happy would be the right word, because it was such a traumatic time in our lives, but I felt some peace, like seeing the dome like lit up like outside my room. And Abby was there. She was doing fine. She was on a breathing machine. She was breathing on her own. She was doing well. You know, she was nursing. You know, it was, that was one thing I had control over. She actually nursed. That's, I was like, great. Oh, Jesus, thank you, Jesus. But gosh, how did we, so the story basically ends with, you know, we had a really great neurologist, Dr. Mossamy, out there. And he knew we wanted to get home. And he told us, he's like, listen, I'm going to go out on a limb for you here. He's like, I think if you're going to go home, go this week. He's like, I'm going to give Abby enough drugs and, you know, medication so that she can make a voyage. And he dealt with the pilot, because if you have a medical situation, you have to deal with the pilot. The pilot has the choice to kick you off or not. And so Dr. Mossamy and the pilot were kind of talking, you know, about Abby's airfare, and he got her stabilized, and he said, go now. And so we basically, after a month in the hospital, he got us ready to go, and we booked it back to America right after that. And then, you know, she got her first doctor appointment out here, and she's doing great. You know, she's, after all that, after all she's been through, she's had another brain surgery since. So she's had three now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Three or four. Yeah. But she's, you know, she does have cognitive problems. She's, you know, in a wheelchair. She has seizures. You know, she has some serious medical issues, but she's just, she's alive, and all of
she's
her,
happy.
She's happy.
Really, yeah.
And she's, all her doctors now are just, when they see her, they're just like, oh, this child basically has half a brain, if that. And she's,
but she talks, she's really,
yeah,
she's really amazing. I mean, she jokes with you.
She jokes, she loves music, she sings, she's just, we call her the saint of our house. And she is, she's
amazing. Tim, you told me a really great story about her first words.
Yeah, they weren't her first, but yeah, so we got back, the expedited version is, we got back, we didn't know what to do. It was the middle of November when we got back. So I was like, I guess I'll go to law school. I thought her medical care was going to be really costly. I'm like, I guess I'll continue this in law school. So I wound up in law school the next fall, which was the earliest time I could get in. Started, she was doing well, but we were really stressed out. I mean, because it was like PTSD. It was really like PTSD. But so I started in law school. I think my you know, second year, she started getting sick. Her shunt was failing. Mm-hmm. And the long and the short of it is, it was failing over the course of about 9 months. All this went really fast because we were going through kind of tough times, just dealing with having a young kid who was so developmentally behind and having problems, who's throwing up, getting bad headaches. I'd kind of become a hypochondriac. But so I think it was the beginning of the third year of law school. She, you know, we were really stressed out. She had to have her shunt revised, which is a whole other brain surgery. And after that, I was just really, really, really having a difficult time. And it was actually Michael O'Brien, the author, gave me this advice. We'd written him with regard to our story, and I was just telling him how stressed out I was, how scared we always were. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, pray to the Holy Spirit, you know, try praying to the Holy Spirit. And I never had. I never prayed to the third person of the Trinity specifically. So it was Holy Week of 2012, actually. I said a prayer in the middle of the night. I would wake up and totally stressed out and scared. And I just said a prayer to the Holy Spirit. And then it was Holy Thursday. I got up, went to law school, went to work, came back. We went to Mass that night. And Abby was, she had a couple words, like she would say her name and it was real. Like,
guttural. It would be like, glottal. Ung. Like, yeah. She would say it like that.
Yeah. So she had words, and she would joke and smile and do all the things that Abby does. She began to do all the things that Abby does, but it wasn't clear. None of her words were clear. So it was during the consecration, you know, I'd said this prayer to the Holy Spirit probably 12, 14 hours before consecration. She just started chanting something. We always had her there. She didn't have a wheelchair yet because she was little. We just carried her everywhere. She was on the pew. And she,
you still like
been,
to carry her everywhere.
I still like to carry her. Yeah, I don't like that. She's 10. She's gotten to be a big string bean. But yeah. She was on the pew next to us, and this would be, she was like three, but she was way behind in her language. So this was like first clear word. She was just sitting there. She didn't have this word in her vocabulary. We don't know where it came from. She was just sitting there whispering like a mantra repetitively. Holy Spirit, Holy Spirit, Holy Spirit. And it was crystal clear, and none of her other diction was, and she didn't know that term, you know, so it was absolutely an answered prayer. And Abby's sort of the you know, the conduit. It sounded like Miss Cleo, but I mean, like, she, it makes sense that it would come through, through Abby because she's the source of a lot of stress, but she's also the source of so much grace in our mm-hmm. family and a direct sort of instrument for the Holy Spirit. It was amazing because she did not have that word. It was like her first word is the way to tell it.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
It is a beautiful story.
Yeah, well, we like to look on Instagram. We always like Abby. She always has the big smile, and she's surrounded by her family and her sisters, and it looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, you guys are pros. I mean, with the eight, we feel like we were talking last week. We're like, man, five. We've got a sixth on the way, but we're like the Marshalls are pros. I mean, they've been in the game a long time.
I don't know about pros. Yeah. Pros at survival, you know,
yeah. Hunkering down.
Yeah. Yep.
We had our first. You were 23. I was 24.
Yeah.
We had our first.
Yeah, we started off young.
Yeah, we got married. I was 23. You were 22. Mm-hmm. And so we had our first baby.
A little over a year after the.
Oh, I love that.
Oh, okay. So right away. Yeah. So you
yeah.
Jumped yeah, we were right married June 9th, style. And the first baby was June 25th.
I know. I think that just shows you how also sweetly naive we were, because you don't realize all the things that can happen in life. You know, you're just like, let's have a family.
Yeah, that's exactly how it was for us too. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we were like, you know, we love each other, but we were in it for a family. Like, I feel like that was very much what God wanted from us immediately. But yeah, you don't really know what you're getting into. And then we thought, oh, let's have a sibling for our new baby.
Yeah,
and God gave us twin girls as a, you know,
that was
quick follow-up.
Your twins are second and third.
Yeah, yeah. So we thought, we have three within 18 months of each other.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So,
and I remember when the twins were born, there were some complications a little bit.
Yeah.
And I had said, even though we were Episcopalian, mm-hmm. I loved Our Lady at that point. And I said, well, I'll name my first daughter Mary. And then we found out we're having twins, so we'll have Mary and we'll have Rose, like Rosary, or you know, mm-hmm. plus my grandmother was Rosemary. So, the first, I was like, well, whichever one comes out first, that's going to be the Mary, and then the Rose, right? Mm-hmm. And so Mary came out first, and like the doctors and the nurses were freaking out, and they took her away, and they were putting oxygen on her, and then Joy just went into labor again with the second baby, and so I was like, I realized something was wrong, so I went over to the other baby. And they're like, yeah, something's not right here, Dad. And she was kind of blue. And she's not breathing.
Just
and
the pressure of Rose on her probably was,
yeah, I was freaking out.
Yeah.
And then they wheeled her out, gone. And then Joy gave birth to Rose. And they gave Rose to her. And I think y'all started nursing. And she's like, where's Mary? And I was like kind of teary and messed up. I was like, something's not right with Mary.
But she was, after some oxygen, she was
They just took took her to intensive care and gave her air. And anyway, so I was like, for like an hour and a half, I was just walking around the hospital trying to find my other daughter. I didn't know where they took her.
Oh,
and then finally someone found me. I was like crying, walking around in the hospital, and they're like, they brought her back. She's back in the room. So I went back to the room and the family was there, and both twins were there, and it worked out.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That sounds, sounds kind of,
but I remember looking at her all blue in the tray.
Yeah.
And I was like, Virgin Mary. I mean, I'm not Catholic, so I'm praying to the Virgin. I'm like, Virgin Mary, I named this child after you. Better not let anything happen.
That's amazing. So you were, what was your first kid that you were Catholic for? I didn't know. That's
our
interesting you didn't marry without even.
Yeah, our fourth. Jude was our first Catholic baby. We came into the church, and a month later, he was born.
Yeah.
And so Jude is Ambrose, his middle name, Jude Ambrose. Is a family name of ours from an ancestor a few hundred years ago who was probably the most recent Catholic in our family before they all became Protestant. And so we put in Ambrose as our
Joy's Catholic. Joy's maternal side comes from recusant secret Catholics in England.
Really?
And the story is a priest was baptizing a baby Protestant in England. Protestant oversaw it. They turned in the priest. The priest was killed.
And but the priest's name was Ambrose.
Catholic priest. And so they always named a child Ambrose in honor of that event.
Oh, I love that.
That was beautiful. Yeah. That's, it's one thing to name your little girl Mary when you're not Catholic when you're Protestant, but to, if you went, yeah, if you told me that Jude Ambrose was the name of your baby and you still weren't Catholic yet, I'd be like, I gotta see this.
I was super Catholic. I was an Episcopalian priest and we wanted to become Catholic, but you know, she was pregnant.
Trying to figure out how are we gonna have
medical insurance and how am I gonna make money? And right. So an old friend of mine said you should pray a novena to St. Jude. And then on the ninth day of that novena, we got offered a job. So I was like, okay, I'm going to name this baby Jude.
What job?
At the Catholic Information Center in D.C.
Oh, that's why you're in D.C. That's right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, your timeline sometimes I like to configure these little timelines. Sometimes I get your timeline mixed up. So you went. That is, it's not just a vocational issue, you know, when you go from being a priest, a married Protestant priest to a Catholic, it's a job issue. Yeah. She was pregnant,
you know, and so I knew the baby was going to be born in a month or two. It's like, well, how do you become, you know, as an Episcopalian priest, I had a pension and medical plan and good salary and all that. And it was
you want to be responsible. It's like, you know, people are like, what are you doing?
But then I'm also celebrating like sacraments on the altar that I don't necessarily believe in.
Yeah.
Like, I can't continue to do that.
After a while, you're in a spiritual crisis of, we don't believe this is where we're supposed to be. Like this is, we're at this position in life. Like, how does this come? And I feel like there's more Protestant people who are like preachers or pastors who like that's a huge holdup for them, because what would they do even if they became convicted of the truth of the church? But anyway, right. God, I mean, I feel like we're, you know, you give your life to God, his providence, he will work out these details, you know, like,
oh yeah,
that's right.
Novena to St. Jude, God completely provided a job. It was a huge jump for us, but we were still in a time of life when we were ready to like make big irrational jumps, like, okay, I'm going to cross the country
while I'm
8 months pregnant with our fourth child and, you know, start something totally different. But you feel like your whole life is still ahead of you, so let's do it.
Yeah.
Right. It's an important willingness to make big irrational leaps when you're young.
Which is why you should have kids in your 20s. You should start having kids, ideally.
Yeah, it keeps you pretty limber. You're like, okay, I can try that. You know, like, well, you're going to do that.
No, that's not a joke. That's not what you guys are saying, Joy and Taylor, is really real. This is why you have kids when you're sort of a kiddish in your mindset. You're not totally devastated by the fact that you will have to change. You will have to put aside a doctorate and leave. You will have to put aside your job, you know, on behalf of your family and say, I have to go be a Catholic.
Yeah. Right. And I remember a very strong conviction, even whenever we were discussing like the Catholic issue, of realizing, you know, we could put this off. Like if we were like the responsible, you know, like you just got ordained not really long ago, you know, maybe we should like stick with that investment for a while. We could put this whole thing off, but we want our family raised in the faith, and we still have time to go through another time of transition without being like having all these older kids and like even being more locked into a, you know, a profession or something like that. This is the time, you know, and so just kind of this is our time of flexibility. Like, let's just do it. So I think people lose that when they wait a long time to start their family and start adulthood.
They do. Absolutely. Joy, I was surprised to hear you say, you were having like premonitions or at least sort of prescient feelings that Catholicism was the way even ahead of, when Taylor was feeling it viscerally, right?
Yeah, I mean, I started feeling intense crisis, I would say, like going to his services, church services, and being like, I don't think this is where I'm supposed to be. Like, you know, I think that Christ is present in the Eucharist, and I can't say that the Catholic Church does not affirm that he's present here at this church. But he does say he's there at, you know, in the Roman Catholic Church, and I know he wants me to receive him body, blood, form, and divinity. You know, like I just had that conviction. So I would leave church, you know, services in tears. It was a crisis for several months. And then finally, like after Taylor had been ordained, I was like, babe, I just have to go. Like we're going to have to do a two church situation.
I was like, you can't do that. You can't. Like the wife of the priest can't walk down the street and go to the Catholic church. Like, you can't do that.
I'll come hang out with you later. But yeah, your church. But I'm going to have to go to the Catholic church. I just can't. I felt like this was in my time of prayer with God. He would not let me drop it. You know, it was like, you aren't doing what I'm telling you to do. Like, you're.
What put the notion in your head? I didn't understand when you were saying this before. It's beautiful. And it's really reflects an inner strength that's admirable. But what put the notion in your head first?
Well, I just think I learned, honestly, pretty early, even whenever we were still dating. I had a yearning. I had read the Bible a ton growing up, and especially in college. I had done a lot of, like, some theological training with our different church that we, you know, went to, churches and stuff, and I felt a longing. I knew there was more, like, you know, the God of the Old Testament, like, church looked more than just, you know, a prayer service and reading the Bible, you know, and we leave. You know, I felt like there was just something severely lacking that that God was wanting, you know, to give us tools of the faith. And so I just, while we lived in Philadelphia when Taylor was in seminary, I would drive about 30, 40 minutes into kind of more inner city area to work at a little Anglican school there. And every day, the only way I got through that commute was listening to Catholic radio, which I'd never heard before in my life. And after a while, I was like, man, these people have some answers, and they have some really cohesive, you know, theology, way more cohesive than I ever had found in my upbringing as a Protestant. And it all comes back to, you know, Christ's true presence in the sacrament, you know? So I had gotten just, you know, a layman's, you know, theological take during that time. And then while we were at home with three kids under 18 months, you know, I turned to Catholic TV. It was like my EW10 a couple times a day was, you know, my way of getting through and listening and realizing, okay, this is my future. I know it is. And so anyway.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Well, did you go to A&M?
I went to Baylor.
No. We met on
you went to Baylor.
I was laughing because Vatican City is only 2 miles around it. The track around Baylor was like over three. I just realized how small Vatican City is. We used to always run the little bear trail around Baylor, but it was
I think I was already, and we need to wrap up because Tim's got to get to work. But we met on a blind date. And on that first day, she doesn't remember this, but I remember on the first day her asking me about, like, do you think Jesus is in the Lord's Supper?
Really?
I was like, well, this is a different chick.
That's a good
like, I never dated a chick like that.
Well, he actually he's thought of things like this before. Like, whereas most guys hang out with, I would ask him questions, they'd be like,
we're at an Italian restaurant in Waco, and I remember her bringing it up. And then on our second date, we were talking about apostolic succession. So I was like, this girl's kind of deep. And so I think we were not yet Catholic. So we were already asking these kind of questions, these Catholic questions. And I don't know. I actually think that's why we fell in love and got married.
I think so. Well, because I had I was mostly into Protestant circles, and those things you know, compute, like you ask, that's never occurred to them, you know, and I need someone who actually, on one hand, I realized when you were like really debating the color of vestments, I was like, man, I don't know I kind of didn't understand that because he likes to get into the details of everything. the basics that like, what is the church and what is all that? Like, because we were totally coming from very strictly Protestant backgrounds, you know, he's actually somebody who was thinking through these things.
So, yeah.
Anyway. That's wild on your first date. You guys were a couple of proto-Catholics.
I know, we were.
A couple of Protestant kids, one at Baylor, you were at A&M.
Yeah, I was at A&M.
Taylor? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just Texas Protestants thinking like Catholics already.
I know.
They're former Texans.
Yeah, we met in Texas, Plano. Too. Yeah, all four of us met in Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah, we met in the Dallas area, though.
I'm a Texan.
No, Dallas is kind of fake Texas, it's sort of transplanty. Oh, you have real Texans there that have been in Texas their whole life. They're real, but you got a lot of transplants that hop around the country.
Yeah.
But like Waco's real Texas. Anyway, that's amazing. Yeah, I gotta run. But
you gotta run.
Mm-hmm. We need to go on a real double date sometime.
I know, right?
I know, yeah.
So we'll do it again. So everybody, thanks for watching. That's great. When I first, I knew Tim for a little while, and then he told me the story about Abby, and I was like, wow, it's incredible. Yeah. I'd love to have you, maybe you and Steph, come on and tell that story just so people get to know who the Gordons are. So I'm glad we got to do it. And Abby's sweet. All the kids are sweet. And since you already announced it, congrats on the new baby.
Yes, congratulations. On the way.
That's great. Everybody pray for that new baby.
Please pray.
I don't know if we'll ever catch up to eight, but we'd like.
I'm on my fifth C-section now. I had twins, so I'm on my fifth C-section now. So I need prayers.
So everybody pray for Steph and the baby. So
great to meet you, Joy.
Yeah,
we'll meet you in person. Yeah.
So everybody, if you like these videos, subscribe and like. Pray the rosary every day. Pray the rosary for all these kids, all your kids, whole church, everybody. So, all right. Godspeed. Be salty.
God bless.